wants to keep the compensation the same. And this has been a continuous, you know, challenge with her, because she says, I want more money. I need more money. I need this. And we say, great, here's an opportunity for you to get more money. Oh, I can't handle that. And we feel it going in this continuous cycle.
I think in this case, for you to be really clear with her, and this is where one of these things where, like, there's a dance and a dynamic to the way that you manage a team member like this. And the starting point is, let me start with curiosity, openness, and see if we can help you. But if you keep coming back and abusing that kindness, we're going to have to make some calls and decisions, which we're doing now. So boil it all down and make it very simple. I understand that all of this is confusing. I understand that I didn't do a great job of involving you at a certain point. But let me be very clear about how this started and why we've ended where we are. And nothing that you've said at this point is going to change that. And I don't regret any of the choices we've made other than not involving you sooner. Uh-huh. So the reason it started is because you came to us to tell us it wasn't working. It was a question of capacity. You demonstrated over a significant enough time after multiple conversations that you were still incapable of handling this workload. We had to make a decision. If you are incapable of handling this kind of bandwidth and workload, that is okay. But there are consequences to that. And this is the consequence. I respect what you're going through, but at the end of the day, we have a responsibility to the business to put these things in hands that are capable, that have the right bandwidth and the right capacity to handle this kind of workload. That's the decision we've made. And she can be furious and pissed off and think you're a terrible human, and she can also leave the company. But you've got to have a kind of standard that has boundaries.
Okay.
Boundaries. The funny thing about boundaries is that they're often one of the greatest gifts you give to someone.
Yeah.
And it's a gift that no one ever thanks you for. But it's actually a service to them.
Sure.
So know that when you give her a boundary, you're actually serving her in a meaningful way. Don't expect a thank you.
Yeah. Okay. What are your thoughts on kind of restructuring this slightly to leave some with her in the book of business and move some off? Does that send the wrong message? Is that blurring those boundaries continuously to get the
I think this is you know, you have a little better sense for what's going on, but based on what you've told me, I have the impression that this woman will continue to nickel and dime and take advantage of your kindness.
She has the entire time.
Yeah, then I think all you're doing is going to make that worse. That is not a gift to her to keep training her. You are training her right now. What you've trained her to do is, I'm Colin, I'm a nice guy, and I really want you to like me, and I want you to like our company, and I'm really scared of you not liking this. And so what do you need me to do? And she's like, cool, sweet. Here's what I need. No, I don't like that. Now I want this. Nah, it's still not working for me. I want this. Wait, now you didn't do that. Now I want, This is no different than training a child. They have to hit a wall and go, hey, that must be really hard for you. I'm sorry you experienced it that way. You made a choice. That choice had consequences. Here are those consequences. The choice you made is you told us that you couldn't handle the book of business. We made every effort we could to make that easier on you. That wasn't effective for you. We made a change.
Okay.
So now you have to live with the consequence or not, but this is the decision we've made, and I understand you got to do whatever you got to do. And no. She might be looking for work elsewhere now, which, frankly, God bless her, be on her way. I think this is a very demanding employee, and I do think that part of it is you guys have encouraged it a little bit.
Absolutely.
So this goes back to niceness of the culture has to be calibrated with clarity and boundaries and honesty.
Yeah.
No, and by the way, Colin, I love the kindness. I think it's amazing. I'm almost always advocating more kindness in the corporate world.
Yeah.
But I also believe that once people are at that state, you're now hurting the business.
Yeah. It's been a consistent roller coaster.
Yeah. Yeah. And you can even say that. You can say, look, you need to understand that as employees go, this has been one of the biggest roller coaster rides for us. And we've been taking it with you, and we'll take it to an extent. But at a certain point, our patience has worn thin and our patience has hit its limit. So now you've hit a limit. That's all. So just that kind of firm, strong backbone, let her hate you for a while. Expect the drama, but don't give in to it.
Okay.
And by the way, when you've been a really nice guy for a long time and you suddenly come up with a boundary, it's going to hurt more than if you were just a jerk all the way along.
I get that.
So just know the reaction will be even bigger. And I thought you were this, and you're such a BS artist. You come off so nice, and you're not nice at all. You're this, you're that. Fine, whatever. Yeah, fair point. I was too nice for too long. I get it. That's why I'm confronting myself, not you. You can even say that. I mean, there are different ways to have the conversation. One of them is just be like, I owe you another apology. I think I've given you the impression that it's okay for you to keep coming back over and over again on this. And that's on me. So now let me be really clear. We're now out of time. We've reached our limit on having these conversations. And if I wasn't helping you see that before, that's my fault, but I'm helping you see it now. Mm-hmm. But this is where you stand in the context of our employees. There is a tremendous amount of demand from you, and we have tried to be responsive. And even when we were responsive, you still didn't like it, and you're free to not like it, but this is where we are. So you have a couple of different ways you can have that conversation, but the message at the end of the day is the same, which is you don't get to keep having this conversation anymore. It's done.
Yeah.
And in some ways, you know, you might have said, you know, when you said, hey, take some time, think it over, you might have given her some impression that she had a choice still in the matter. And I think that's, again, another place for your leadership where you need to get good at saying, hey, I want to be really clear. Take some time to think things over, but know that the decision is made and it's not changing. So when I say take some time to think things over, I'm saying get yourself adjusted to it.
Yeah.
And if you gave any other impression, then that might be why she's coming back on you, that this is still a negotiation. So that's my question for you. Is it a negotiation?
I guess it all depends. It's always been a negotiation. So at this point in time, you know, I'm sitting more on a clear cut path, and that this is not a negotiation. You know, the CEO obviously is of similar like in mind of myself. So, you know, we've been on this roller coaster together, and it's always kind of been give back a little bit, and we've given too much at this point in my eyes with her. But we've created this monster, right? So, you know, there's definitely fault to be had, or at least, you know, we contributed to how the situation is currently in its current stages. So, you know, whether or not, you know, this is, you know, the last one or something along those lines where we draw very, very clear boundaries, you know, going forward, this is how it's going to be. And, you know, here's the final straw component of things. I don't know. You know, in from a pure economic standpoint, the salary that she's drawing and the cost to replace, we're still out ahead to get somebody to replace what she does for the book of business that she works on outside of this book of business is going to be difficult to replace. And there's going to be costs associated with onboarding and recruiting and so forth that are going to put it over what she's making currently. So there's still a little bit of wiggle room from an economic standpoint to make an accommodation. But I hear you loud and clear that, you know, if any accommodation is going to be made or whatever the stance is that we're going to take, it has to be 100% clear, direct, and, you know.
Yeah, well, it's not, I mean, as you add in, it sounds like you have some business considerations that are legitimate and valid. And I'm not a big fan of turnover in any organization.
Right.
But I want you to calculate two things. I want you to calculate in your mind, not literally, but the indirect cost to the organization to have an employee that is doing this much. It isn't just a financial cost. Mm-hmm. So just remember that. And then offset that with whatever you think your final offer is, give it and let her know it's your final offer. So if you do want to come back and say, I hear your complaint. I hear your concerns. We'll do this instead. But man, that sounds just weird to me that you're going to offload a big piece of business and still pay her for that business and you're still coming out ahead. I mean, I don't know how that math works. I don't know why is that?
It's the job market right now. The inflation of the account manager type role costs has extrapolated amazingly, over the last 6 months.
Okay.
And so that position was a $75,000 position 2 years ago, and now it's a $100,000 position.
I see.
And okay. So,
that may be why she's feeling emboldened, by the way.
Potentially, yes.
If she knows that, that's why she's feeling emboldened. And then you just have to make your decision about whether that's worth it. You know, is it worth having a much better culture fit for someone who isn't a pain in your ass and you pay him an extra 25 grand? Maybe, you guys get to make that call.
Yeah.
I just look at it and think, how many times do I want to have conversations like this with somebody who clearly doesn't seem to respect her limits? But again, I hear what you're saying. I'm not trying to dismiss the labor market. I totally get that's a choice we all have to make all the time. It's like, what's going on in the business itself and how does that work? So my suggestion is just take a moment, ask yourself, how much is it costing me indirectly, emotionally, to keep having these conversations? And then the second question is, what am I willing to concede? Uh-huh. If anything, you might be willing to concede some more, but not a lot, or maybe who knows? And then just go back to her with that as your final offer and just be really clear. This is kind of the end of the negotiation. I think we've gone back and forth. You've made some points. I've made some points. We've taken that into consideration. This is our decision. And what I want you to know is after this, we expect not to have this conversation anymore.
Yep.
And we look forward to you working and contributing. We think you're great and we want you to keep at it. But I think we're at our end of the conversation.
Okay. Put a period on it.
Yep. As much as you can. Just do a little math internally to figure out, like any negotiation, it's whoever's willing to walk away wins. So you've got to get to the point where you offer what you're willing to walk away from. So just make sure you're clear on that.
Yep.
Sound good?
Thank you.
Yeah, you bet.
Appreciate talking through it.
Yeah. I'm going to come back to you in a minute. JD, how you doing?
Good day. Yes. Doing well. Yourself?
I'm doing well. Doing well. Most people couldn't make it today. So we got a small group today.
How's it going, JD?
Hello, how are we doing, Colin?
Yeah, not too bad.
No.
What's on your mind, JD? You want to talk about anything?
So, looking for some advice on how to start into an executive committee. I was invited by our ownership group to start attending our meetings on a weekly basis.
Congratulations.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Thanks. It's a big deal.
So we went from a committee of six to now eight.
I'm going to take full credit for this, by the way.
The ROI, right?
This is your ROI, man.
a lot of it's due to that, definitely. And I've got a call from my owner. I don't know if I mentioned that last couple of weeks or not, but he called me and said, what are you drinking? What are you doing every day? Because what you're doing is just, it's clicking and you're making the right moves and everybody's falling into place where we need them to in that. And I told him, I was like, it's really just these coaching calls that's helping you get through that area. So
you're my best endorsement yet, man.
So I know that, but the executive part we talked about 6 months ago, and it was just trying to get everything, but to a point, it is due to being able to go to these meetings, has been due to you to get this stuff organized, save that time that I need to be able to set aside to that, get everybody where I need to be. So
that's awesome, JD. That seriously, congratulations, man. That's a really big deal. I'm excited for you. So what's on your mind? What's the question then?
Yeah, I had my first meeting this past Monday. It's a 8:30 to noon meeting, and we hit anything and everything. They got me the agenda like late Friday. And so I just kind of went in there and I was just taking notes frivolously, didn't really interject too much unless they spoke to me necessarily. I was kind of taking that approach to the first meeting to be like, okay, I'm needing to see what happens here on a regular basis, what the interaction types is. Everyone that's on the executive board or committee there, I've worked with them over the last 5 to 6 years. In different facets and pretty much on a day-to-day basis, being a regional manager and working with the executive team, that's something we do on a regular basis. So I have good working relationships with them and just trying to see how that all works on those Monday mornings and what all we're hitting on and focusing in on. I didn't ask a lot of questions necessarily, which I felt that I probably needed to ask more, but I didn't want to hold up the meeting necessarily. So just any advice into starting into a new executive team and how to work out that best.
How many people are in the room?
Eight, consistently. And then we'll have people come in. Like we had one of our salespeople come in and give a presentation, an hour presentation on that day. So they'll be in and out through the different departments and things of that nature, but eight normal.
And this is the owner of the company and his senior lieutenants kind of thing?
So we have the two brothers that own the company, and then the owner, the oldest owners, or this, I guess he's got 51% of the company or whatever, but his oldest son is in the room as well. He started in the company after I did, and then I trained him as a pharmacy manager, and then he jumped over me and hopped up onto the board level probably 5 years ago. And I was still working in the current position I'm in. And then we have COO, CFO, a cousin to the current owners that VP of pharmacy operations, or not pharmacy, the home medical side of the store. And then they just moved up another regional manager and myself, who was over the long-term care, and then I'm over the retail.
Okay. And what is your understanding? What is your understanding of their expectations of you? Why did they tell you that they wanted you in that room?
Well, the owner that I report directly to kind of gave it at the beginning of the meeting, outside of telling me, but told the whole team that I was there to, because they valued my opinion. They needed more feedback and information on the retail department or the retail segment of the company, and that they knew I could make good decisions and have good input into the things that they're doing day to day.
So. Great. Okay. So a couple things I'll say. One is you don't want to wait too long to contribute value. So totally fine. First time out, be a listener, just learn. But you want to be on the lookout for how do I demonstrate some value in a succinct way that doesn't hijack the agenda or conversation, right? So you're going to be sitting there going, okay, from the vantage point of the retail operator, they're having a conversation that has direct implications for what we'll be doing. And I have frontline data that can inform the decision they're making. And so the way that you admit information into a conversation is you say things like, hey, as the operator of that piece of the business, there's some data here that might be useful for you as you deliberate. And if you think that they're going in a direction that isn't so good, let them know. But the way you let them know is that same managing up process we talked about, which is, hey, I just want to lay out some choices and consequences you're facing. If you choose that, here are the dominoes that begin to be falling and moving on this end. If you go this way instead, you're going to get this set of dominoes. I'm happy to execute either. Which one do you think you prefer? Those phrases, your job in those moments is, you are a dashboard gauge that is helping leaders facilitate decision-making. And you're not really the kind of person to be overly demanding. So some people who are overly demanding and think they own the world and know everything, and you're not one of those. So I would tell that person to dial it back and to be very careful. In your case, I'd actually tell you to have some courage to really step up and go, I'm a really valuable contributor to this. And the longer you stay silent, the more they're like, why is this guy in the meeting? He's just kind of sitting there listening. And there's a good reason for you to sit and listen, because it's going to inform how you lead and manage. So that's valid. But you need to be surgical about, at least once in a meeting, you want to demonstrate some kind of value.
Okay.
And so just be taking notes, thinking about it, formulating your thoughts, and then be courageous and step up and say, from a place of credible authority, by virtue of my role and what I see, my vantage point, here's what I can tell you. And then always remember that they're at a level in an organization where they have a vantage point that they're seeing different trade-offs than what you're seeing. And I think you already get that. So I think it's really easy for you to navigate that. Whereas a lot of kind of middle managers have a harder time getting that. So they're always like, why are they doing that? And it's like, because they have different trade-offs that you don't understand because you're not at that level. And and I think you're really good at getting that. So I'm super excited for you. I just, congratulations.
Great. Thank you.
I think that's awesome. We'll come back to you guys in a minute. Mitch, welcome. How you doing?
Hey, good. Sorry I'm late. Was completely tied up. Couldn't get off.
No problem. You had sent me an email. Do you want to talk about that or do you want to do that?
Happy to if you think it's appropriate. And guys, nice to meet you all. I don't think I'm kind of new to this.
Colin, so, this is Mitch Sikora. He's the
former, I didn't dress up for you today. Sorry.
Yeah, it hurt all of our feelings. Mitch is actually a very long-time private client of mine. And we just completed a piece of work, and we thought it would be good for him to just continue on at kind of a lighter level to join the group coaching. And so he and I have quite a bit of context and history, and he is the owner of a capital fundraising company for private equity real estate. And Colin is a head of operations for a company that does insurance-related things, and JD is a manager to pharmacy, kind of a director within a pharmacy medical organization, and they have a retail arm and other things. So
I actually, now that you say that, I remember, I think you were on last time.
JD,
yeah,
was
so on. Nice to see you again. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, Colin wasn't, so.
Right. So.
All right. So fire away.
Yeah. So, and it's fair to say, can we preface this by the fact that I'm in a rather large fee negotiation with a client, and you've been acting as essentially mediator, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, we're down to the final straws on this thing, and I'm just going to call up an email so I say this right, and much of it won't necessarily make sense to you guys, but so I'll get through it quickly. But I think the overall gist will. We had kind of three outstanding issues at the very end, right? And as an overview, I've had a long relationship with a client, somebody Shane knows, and we're terminating the relationship after 7 or 8 years. It's not acrimonious or anything. Time to move on. All good, except that there were, you know, as there always are, there are some disparities in how he reads the agreement and I read the agreement, and it ends up being a lot of money, right? And I think everybody has the best of intent, but everybody's protecting their own side. A, B, you know, you kind of realize in this situation, and I've realized this in many instances over life, right? Better to be a defendant than a plaintiff. Right. Because, you know, and in this case, I would be the plaintiff if we went to court. And so, you know, he owes me a fair amount of money. I haven't gotten a payment in, you know, almost 9 or 10 months. Right. It's real money. And so I'm just going to run through the issues with Shane, because I think as we get to the final straw here, like, he's just doing what he does, like he's just negotiating and keeps clawing at me, but going, and every time I try and get something in return, he's like, yeah, I don't see it that way. And I'm just like giving up more and more. And I do see the benefit, and I talked about it with my management team earlier today, of getting beyond this and, you know, freeing up our minds emotionally, because it's just not healthy. And B, you know, we can concentrate on making money. The business is strong and we have plenty to do. And this is, you know, this is kind of weighing us down and me down, certainly. And so the issues were, is that, you know, we had talked about these tail and follow-on fees, and what I tried, and we're still at one bite at the apple, right? And that I think is pretty opportunistic on his part for a host of reasons that we've discussed in the past. But what I had my counsel do in the last redraft was say, listen, if somebody comes into one of the funds and that there's also a direct commitment within 12 months of that same fund commitment, then that's essentially one commitment, right? I should be paid for both of those, right? And Terrell, and so Terrell, when he read that, he goes, well, that don't make any sense. He goes, I see what you're trying to do. You're trying to make sure that you don't get screwed by a small commitment followed by a big commitment, right? So what I heard him say was, I'll just pay you for the biggest commitment, but it's the one commitment, right? And I read that to be like, oh, that makes sense, you know, given where we are, especially since I'm getting one bite at the apple. And so maybe I'm giving up a little bit, but if, you know, if somebody comes into VREC 4, you know, a year after they come into VREC Enhanced Core, at 100 million versus 20 million, then if he looks back and I get paid the biggest one commitment, I'm happy, right? And so the response essentially was, yeah, that's not what I meant, right? That's not what I meant. He goes, I'm just trying to protect you from if somebody makes a $5 million direct commitment and then 3 months later makes a, you know, $25 million commitment into VREC 4, that you're not getting screwed by the $5 million before the $25 million. But looking at Enhanced Core versus VREC 4, that's something that we're not prepared to do. And I'm kind of like, but, you know, I'm giving up collecting on either one. And you're kind of mixing the good news with the bad news. Like, if I'm getting paid on the best one, that still means you got two commitments, one of which was completely free, right? And so, I just feel like it's a very opportunistic read, right? And then there was another thing about this, you know, consultant issue, which, you know, we tighten up the definition of, and he gave me one example where the way he described it, I said, yeah, actually, I wouldn't intend to be paid for what you've just described. So he goes, let me redraft something. You know, I think you and I can get to the heart of the matter better than counsel. And yesterday I was out at some whatever, I was just out and didn't really pay attention to it. And, so now I'm giving up on that. And then I think just getting screwed on this other thing. And so, you know, the question is, when do I either go back for another bite, send you in and go, you know, Mitch or Terrell, Shane speaking, I think, you know, I think you ought to consider this. He's given up a lot. This makes sense. Or just let it go and just move on. Right.
Yeah. I just went back.
And obviously Mitch is being a good guy about this consultant thing. Like everybody's being above board here, but I just, the more it happens, the more I just feel like I'm getting screwed. Now you and I have talked about it, but it's just real money. And we're talking now about perhaps marginal amounts of money, perhaps, but it could end up being a lot. And just because of an opportunistic read and then I'm becoming fatigued by it, you know, perhaps I'm giving up real money.
I am of the opinion based on, you know, because I've been involved in this negotiation and have a pretty good handle on all of these details and trade-offs and negotiating elements and all the things he feels he's given up and all the things you feel you've given up. So I'm really clear on both sides on this. If you want me to go back to Terrell and try to do that, I can. My recommendation is that you stop worrying about this, honestly. I don't think it's going to get you very far. And I don't think you're talking about, I mean, we went through the biggest issues already. This is now like, that's the milk jug on the top of your head. Like it's could be maybe, but right now get what you can have, a bird in hand instead of two in the air. And right now we're kind of debating about two in the air and everybody's tired and everybody just wants this to be over and done. And part of the cost of that is you might give up a little bit of opportunity, but I'm telling you, man, energetically, what you gain is so much more than the money you could possibly make by noodling these last little bits. I don't think Terrell is up to no good. I think you guys didn't understand things the same way. You're both coming at it reasonable. I understand your argument. I understand his argument. I believe you guys have made huge progress and you need to focus on what you've achieved and not worry too much about this stuff. So that's my advice. That's my recommendation. But as a person you've hired to mediate, I will absolutely go back to him if you want me to, but I recommend you take it. That's my suggestion. Mostly for no other reason other than because I know what it does to you to stay in this. And I've continued to press you on it's time. You've gone as far as you can.
And I hear you every time. And I'm actually like, as I'm talking to my management team, I'm telling them the same story. Like better to move on.
It is.
But it's just like, every time I think we're splitting the pie down the middle, he keeps nudging it further and further to his side.
I understand that. And that is, again, you can keep fighting over fractions of the pie more and more and more. And this will continue, by the way. I mean, this is what I knew would happen when I said you guys are 80% of the way there. The last 20% is the hardest because it starts to feel emotional again. It's death by 1,000 paper cuts instead of just let's look at the really big picture. You know, you're splitting a check at dinner and you're not looking at like, well, you had that drink and that drink was $2 more than my drink. And like, at the end of the day, just you have plenty of money. You're doing great. And you won. You guys avoided legal battles. Well done. Congratulations. That would have cost you both enormously. And you both were adults and you both handled it well. And you get to walk away and be friends and be done. But more than anything, I mean, this may sound strange to you, but I'm telling you, I'm more concerned about the energetic ties to this whole experience for you and the way that that is drawing down from you in ways that you aren't calculating. So I have been pushing you all along to sever the ties as soon as you possibly can to free up energy that is true money generating energy, because the energy you're doing diminishing returns. Always going
to be around to loan me a few bucks if things get tight.
Yeah, if things get bad, I will refund you some part of what you paid me. You know, if you're really hurting, you can stay on a guest room. You can stay with me. I'm telling you, free up some of that making energy, because right now this is just limiting. You know, you're bailing out a ship. You got a whole new boat. Go get rid of that boat. It's gone. Done. Go get a really big, beautiful one you've already built. It's a yacht. It's gorgeous. Go enjoy it. Get rid of that.
Okay.
So that's my advice. Swallow hard, say thanks, move on, and let the universe take care of the karma if there is any. You know, if he overreached in any way that he shouldn't have, the most beautiful thing about my experience of the universe is it always comes back.
Yeah.
If you were taking any money you shouldn't have had, you will be given it back to you. I don't know why that is. I know that sounds weird and spiritual, but it really is. And I've just seen it over and over again in my own life, where I just like, if somebody did what I think was screwing me out of money, I just am like, cool, enjoy, man. Eventually, if you weren't supposed to have that, you'll get paid back. And I will too, if I was supposed to have it.
Okay, done.
Done and done. Good. Okay, happy to hear it. Okay, who else? What else do you guys want to talk about?
Just a thought and piggybacking on kind of, Mitch, thank you for sharing. It sounds like you're have gone through quite an ordeal.
It's just part of life, yeah. Right? I mean, this is just part of, you know, running a business. It's an everyday thing.
My question would be, you know, we have similar clients, or I don't know, but similar, but just clients that are very abusive and are high profile, and they bring other things to the table outside of just income, with reputation, notoriety, and so on and so forth. So I guess my question, Shane, is how do you make that determination when enough is enough? And how do you kind of value, or at least objectively look at something that's so highly emotionally charged and personal, and assign some sort of value to that, you know, mental bandwidth, to the pieces that you are missing out on, or the things that you are unnecessarily, you know, spending, exhibiting energy towards?
Well, maybe just walk me through a little bit more in detail, like be very specific, because I guess I don't know enough about your business to understand what you're referring to. So what's a concrete example? And it's confidential. We won't, you know, ever share any of it. I'm just like, what do you mean? Like, what kind of high profile? What are they, just really rich people, or are they celebrities, or do they have big platforms? That's what I don't understand.
Okay. Yeah. I'll give you a little bit of background. Thank you for the inquiry. The client that we have just paid the largest loss from a medical malpractice standpoint in the history of medical malpractice, over $1 billion in a settlement. Wow. And it was circulated around alleged allegations of sexual abuse and so forth. So that is the context and the politically charged and numbers that we're throwing around here with respect to that client. It's all public information, so you can find out pretty easily who that client is. They have been in the midst of legal battles with insurance carriers over this, and we control one of the insurance policies, to the only insurance policy that responded to this loss. Everybody else denied coverage, and so on and so forth. So a couple of the insurance companies in the tower of insurance that we control are bringing lawsuit against this client, alleging that they knew something before they actually reported it and went out and bought extra insurance, knowing very well that they were going to need it. And so that would disqualify coverage, obviously. And so there's a couple of lawsuits that are going on that obviously with our role in the placement of that insurance, you know, we are being drawn into the lawsuit. And up until this point, we've played really nice because they've been a great client. They, you know, a very, very labor intensive client, one that I know very intimately. But we've collaborated over the years up until the last couple of years when it's gotten really, really, really messy. And so we've helped foot the bills, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars put forth in preparing our office and our staff to attend depositions and participate in on behalf of the client or really support the client through this process. We're coming up to the final ends. We've got a couple of depositions coming up towards the end of this year, and we find out that they're going out for an RFP on brokerage services for this client, for this insurance program that we control. And so we're kind of like, WTF, you know, yeah. We've been bending over backwards. We've been footing the bill on a bunch of different stuff. And our margins on this account are in the red for sure. And they have been, you know, for most of our relationship, just given the amount of labor we put towards it. But it's a great, you know, it's a big account, and obviously it's a huge organization, and it gives us notoriety and street cred. So I guess that's the context. And so, you know, we're kind of in the position of, do we, you know, what do we do? Do we just start saying, hey, you know, if you guys are going to swap us out, then, you know, here are the attorney bills for the last 2 months that we're not going to cover anymore. Because we've been covering it, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah. And look, so, man, what you just told me is true, that basically you're not making that money, much money. Credibility is a very important thing. I'm not saying that it doesn't matter, but I'll tell you, credibility is only important when you have none anywhere else. So if you really, truly are starting out and you guys are having a hard time getting clients and you're losing out to others all the time, and this one client is your silver bullet every time you can say, hey, we've got this client, and that's like linchpin in your sales process, fine, operate in the red, take the abuse, do what you have to do until you get a better client where you don't have to do that anymore. But that's the only thing that client is bringing you. So you need to ask yourself the question, is the credibility enough to warrant loss of money and what will be now, it looks like betrayal anyway. So, you know, if they're out treating you that way, I would say if you can afford the lack of that connection to that client, all the better. You can also very easily still use the credibility of that client, depending on how your sales process goes. You can say, this is one of our largest. We had them for this long. We parted ways because of a public, you know, issues that were going on, and we had to move on. And, you know, there's ways to talk about it so that you still have that credibility. I mean, I had a client who worked at Apple. He's not my client currently, but he still was a client of mine and was an Apple employee. And that's a credibility point for me.
Yeah.
So, you know, and I can still use that even if he's not currently paying me money right now. So I think that's the thing that you want to ask, is it sounds like you're only talking about credibility. Am I hearing that right?
I mean, there's a substantial amount of income that we make on it, but the labor costs and the opportunity costs of others, you know, it would write itself within 6 to 12 months pretty easily.
I'll let the other guys weigh in too on this. I don't think this is like unique to my skill set. It's just my observation of doing business and working with lots of companies. So I would say I wouldn't overthink these guys too much. I wouldn't give them too much power, especially if you're operating in the red. That's a major problem in my mind.
Yeah,
I agree with that for whatever it's worth. Right. Actually, when you, in my opinion, and actually Shane and I have talked about this in the past too, is when you operate in the red, or you know, and you're kind of being held hostage for the PR value of that relationship, I actually think it's counterproductive. Mm. Right? It's not useful PR. You know, it's better to say we parted ways because, you know, it was time to go. You know, it's,
yeah,
not saying they're bad people or anything like that, but you know, we're running a business and we have to do what's right for us, and it was time to go. Love them.
And look, in many ways, Colin, this is the exact conversation I had with Mitch over this one client that we've been discussing, which is that client started, like, revealed accidentally to Mitch that they were talking to other fundraising companies. And it was like, Mitch is like, what are you, like, they accidentally,
right. Yeah, exactly,
Mitch,
yeah,
the email, and he's like, what are you doing? And that's what I was saying to Mitch. I'm like, get out now. You should be in the driver's seat. Don't let them be in the driver's seat of this issue. Let them be on their heels, because that's an inappropriate way to treat you. that's a very intimate relationship. Mitch is not just a vendor. He's like a partner. He's mm-hmm. in regular meetings. He is absolutely in their world. And I just looked at that and told the other client, I'm like, you guys made a major mistake. You should have had him involved in that conversation up front and say, we're not happy with how this is going. We feel like we're closing it out. We want you to be prepared for that. We're going to start talking to other people. That's an upfront, respectful way to do business. It's okay that things move on. It's not okay to do it in secret. And so I think, Colin, just hearing you, I just feel like there's some parallels there between what Mitch just lived through. And so I think you guys get proactive, be on your toes, put them on their heels. They're already like, oh, we're going to RFP this. We'll let them know. We got them in the back seat. Man, cancel it. Get out in front. Send them a
bill. Can I just, look, may I just share another story that I went through, which is, you know, perhaps relevant to this? We took on another client recently, and Chan, I may or may not have shared this, I don't know, but we took on another client recently, and it's, you know, and look, the construct of my business is we have very few clients, all of whom, you know, we hold in high regard. We do a lot of diligence, right? It's, you know, it's a big thing to become one of our clients because we take it quite seriously. And we were right in the beginning of this thing, and we don't do anything. It's not retainer based. And short story is it took about 4 or 5 months longer to get the engagement letter done than we thought it would take. And we told them, but you know, this, we're starting on June 1st, we're working June 1st, and on July 1st, we're going to start charging the retainer. Right. But like in October, when the engagement letter got done, you know, billed them for the outstanding retainer, like 4 months of retainer, which they had no problem with. But in the middle of June, we flew out to California, flew three people out there and had like a $10,000, you know, travel expense, right? And they were like, well, that was in, you know, June, and this was like July 1st. And we did talk about the Shane, and I'm not going to repeat it to the guys like you and I discussed, but I was just like, let me tell you, right? This is causing me grave concern about the overall nature of this relationship. And so essentially I'm willing to eat the $10,000, but I'm going to terminate the relationship completely. And I'll leave the $100,000 of uncollected retainer on the table and eat the 10 grand before I work another more month with somebody who I don't feel comfortable with. Right. And it was just like, and they were like, no, you know, but I think you have to be that way. Like you have to hold your own.
Colin, this,
yeah, you have to value yourself in your company, or else nobody else will. Starts from within.
And Colin, in general, you know, I would say that this is all related to boundaries again. It comes back to the issue of boundaries. And so count some costs, do some math, figure out what you guys, you know, are committed to, and then follow through on it. It sounds like some bad energy to me. Like, I know I use that word a lot, but like in the world of business, energy matters a lot.
Yeah.
What is going on energetically in the transaction of these relationships is very important. And when you pay attention, like this feels bad, that's bad energy now in the system. So I'm always like, I only like to work with the people I really like to work with. And I will sacrifice lots of money on the table if I have to, in order to work with people I really like working with. I find over time that actually works better for me. So something to think about.
Yeah. Appreciate the context, guys. Thank you.
Good. Who else has a question?
One other thing I was looking at is I have a couple new employees starting, and I was reviewing the bonus module there on the first 90 days, found a lot of that more orientated to them than necessarily for me leading their first 90 days. Should I just kind of take what that is and flip that on the employer perspective and try to make sure I answer those questions for them?
Yeah, look, I think the best thing you can do is you can use that as a way to guide them as new employees. You know, most people have no idea how to be a new employee. So that is designed as, if you are in a new role, this is what you need to take on, because ultimately it's your responsibility as a new employee to do that. You as the manager can look at that piece of work and say, oh yeah, I'd love to see that from them. I hope they do that. Then just tell them, like, hey, do this in this way at this time. Meet me in 30 days. Go have these conversations. Ask these kinds of questions. Come back to me with your hypothesis about how you want to spend the next 60 days. let them know. The most important thing from my perspective is that you establish your credibility in the first 90 days. Because here's how, the first 90 days in any organization, you are given 100% credibility. It is all yours. I don't know why that is, just how people do it. It is yours to lose. Every choice you make, every word you speak can either lose your credibility or maintain it. If you lose it in the first 90 days, it is very hard to get back. If you lose it after the first 90 days, it's easier to get back. So the key of the first 90 days is be all about establishing, maintaining that credibility for that first 90 days. And there are specific ways to do that, like stakeholder interviews and getting expectations alignment with your boss and having a series of conversations about that. That will help you establish yourself and maintain yourself, because what you're looking for in the first 90 days is early wins that matter to you, the boss. You want them to be thinking about that.
Because I'm also the one that's going to probably be training them as being kind of over the pharmacist. And I want to delegate that as much as I can from our previous conversations, trying to find more ways to delegate. However, this person's going into the store of the manager that's not a culture fit that's leaving. And so I don't necessarily want him to train her.
Yeah, I think that's wise. Yeah. I think that's wise. And look, you're right. You don't need to be in the ongoing role of trainer, but I think you're wise to just, you're going to take the bullet on this one time because it's a transition. It's not like you've added now to your plate, henceforth, this role. But I'll tell you what, you invest this time now, you get big ROI on that. Leaders that don't do that, they struggle. And kind of leave it to chance. And some employees are really good and they figure it out on their own. And others could be really good. They just need a little bit of steering. And so it's in your interest to steer them. And I would just go through that module and even just the workbook, look at the workbook. You can lift some paragraphs here and there and just give them sections of it to say, I want you to focus on this. I want you to think about this. And in 30 days, here's what I want you to give them. I want you to come, if they're directly reporting to you. If they're not, they don't need to come to you. They can go to their boss, right? Go to your boss and pitch them this. And then make sure you tell their boss, do they have a boss or are they going to report to you?
They're reporting to me.
Oh, great. Even better. Okay. Then you just say, hey, in 30 days, here's what you need to do the first 30 days. At the end of 30 days, let's put something on the calendar, starting now if we want. We'll work against that. And my expectation is you're going to show up and present to me your hypothesis about what's going on and where you should focus your time for the 60 days after that. Mm-hmm. And the goal is to get wins early.
Okay. Well, and we sort of do the 30-60 already before we lead up to the 90-day review. We do an employee acclimation assessment. And so they have 45 questions that they answer and bring in. We meet and make sure we're going on the same direction. Right. Pace and everything. So.
Right. Yeah. I mean, so feel free to fold in anything you think is valuable from my first 90-day training. I don't think you need to just lift it and drop it on them. I think you would just tailor it to your context. And of course, the level of the role matters. Like I wrote that first 90 days thing in part. I mean, some of it's also from research that others have done, but I put that together from the perspective of really senior level leader coming into a complex organization. So it's probably overkill for certain roles.
Okay. Yeah.
So just kind of remember that.
Okay.
Mitch.
Yes.
Last week we were talking about succession planning for you. And I gave you some assignments and I'm curious to know if you had any chance to reflect on any of that. Obviously this stuff isn't urgent. It's just important. So.
No, it's not urgent, but it's important. So that was going to be my next topic. So of course I haven't done everything I should do. But what I did do was, and again, I need to be doing this with the whole set of middle management, right, that will essentially inherit the company in some period of time. But I'm focusing on the one that we talked about that day, which I think is a more of an immediate need. But as I start doing that, I see like we should be doing this all together. And I had him take that one test, right, that you gave me the link to. It was the
5 leadership languages. No, the management polarities.
The management polarities.
Yeah. Where did he score on those? He's in my system. Just give me his email address and I'll find it.
F. Sullivan.
Okay, great.
At JTPL also.
Okay, good.
Wait, Actually, when you print this out of Fordham, they don't print as well as they look on just the regular.
Yeah, I'm sure they don't. That quiz is such an afterthought technologically. Oh, yeah. Wait, I don't know if I do have this. I don't think that does end up in my system.
All right, hold on. Yeah. What day did we meet last time? That was Wednesday.
He took the 5 leadership line. Oh, no, that is the management polarities, and it says I can't pull it up. I don't know why that
hold
is.
Hold on, I'll find it. I wonder if maybe I saved it. No. Hold on. Nope.
Yeah, sorry. I don't know what happened here. Something's wrong in my system.
See, guys, sorry. He sent it to me last, had to be last Wednesday or Thursday, right? No. No. Here we go. Can I forward it to you?
Yeah, or just share your screen.
I don't know how to do that because I do my Zooms on my iPad. Oh. I'm happy for you to, let me forward it to you. Happy to share it with the rest of the guys if you can pull it off.
Yeah, I can do that.
Email it to me. So I mean, I want to hear whatever you have to say, but the two questions I have is I was like, I should also get them to take an Enneagram test. So is there a specific one that you like that, you know, I can just, and then B, it's like, now that I have all this information, the more pertinent thing is how do I actually use it? Like, yeah. I know how you and I use it together, but yeah. I think to be able to use it with my team is a different issue. And I want to be thoughtful about that.
Yeah, I hear you. Okay. All right. Yeah, that is weird. That does print out strange.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's not as pretty. I don't like it as much. Okay, I'm going to share my screen so everybody can see this, so you guys can kind of see how I use this material. Please forgive the crudity of my printout here. Okay, so just as a kind of context for everybody, you know, there is a book I wrote called The 7 Management Polarities, a Tactical Handbook to Leading Teams. It takes the module 5, where I talk about polarities, and I go quite a bit deeper in the book. So there's a lot more kind of depth. And I take the 7 most common polarities that managers have in an organization. And in the book, I give you a quiz that you can take, and then that tells you which chapter to go read in the book. If you work for someone who's out of balance, or if you yourself are out of balance, it gives you exactly the kind of steps for how to engage that. So the first one is like, what altitude do you fly at? You know, are you in a polarity, as you all know, or two interdependent opposites that require one another to function well? And so the first one is doing and delegating. So right now, Frank's way over on the doing side of that polarity. He's got 30% on the doing side. Normally there's a bar chart, but it's not showing up. And he's only 10% on delegating. So that's probably actually candidly appropriate to his role currently.
Yeah, but I would, yeah. So I'm telling you, I think, again, if just to remind you and the guys, right, like he's a guy that always seems like he's got a lot of talent, but he seems to be from a managerial perspective, like always on his heels, you know, very passive, very, I'm on top of it, and then he's not on top of it. And my view has always been that he just, you know, he does stuff all himself and doesn't delegate, and therefore just gets behind, right, when he should be delegating more, to be honest.
Yeah, so this tool may or may not reveal that. I'm going to just read the tool for you, and then you can see how accurate it feels of the assessment, right? And yep. Here are things that I would tell you. I have got to figure out how to be able to send books to clients, because I don't need you guys to go buy my books. But It's worth you reading this book and these chapters in particular as it relates to him.
I think I bought that book, too.
Okay, if you have it, take a look at it. Again, I'm not not in the business of selling books to people who already have paid me for my services. So the first thing I'd say is this. Eventually, if he wants to be the owner of that business, he's going to have to balance out the 30-20 on delegating doing. So that chapter four, I'd have a look at that chapter. How do you drive performance results in people? He seems pretty balanced there. 20-30, he's a little more people than he has results. That may be where you're getting some of what you're talking about, but honestly, that's pretty impactful.
Yeah, that's okay.
How do you relate to the future? Are you more positive or are you more realistic? He's all positive. Might be good for him to balance out. And again, so chapter six, I would encourage you to read as it relates to him. How do you help somebody who kind of has rose-colored lenses all the time and maybe doesn't see some of the reality on the ground? That can cause leaders to be detached. And again, the point of this assessment isn't to diagnose. It's to help you have an initial conversation. The book that I wrote is designed to help you have that initial conversation to test, to gauge, is this an accurate assessment of that person? Does this person agree with that assessment? So, so that's that. How do you deal with information? Transparency and privacy are these two polarities. He's way over on the transparency side. Make sure you read chapter seven as it relates to him. Get clear on transparency is really good, but obviously privacy is necessary, right? So simple way to think about that is, you know, privacy is what you do in the bathroom. We all know it happens. It's not a secret, but it's not something you discuss. It's meant to be private, right? Secret is I withhold information to use power against you. That's a secret. And so leaders that don't understand the importance of privacy will lose credibility over time because they don't protect people. And whereas transparency, leaders that are overly private and don't value transparency will lose credibility over time because people will feel like they're always hiding information. And so that is a classic polarity in leadership that if you skew to one side over the other, you're going to have kind of issues. How fast do you move? Planning and acting. So this is probably the one you're talking about.
Yeah.
So so the polarity of are you a planner or are you an actor are really just like, are you a person who spends more time thinking about the work than actually doing the work? And both are necessary. In this case, you're dealing with a leader who is overly focused on planning and you're missing some execution. So chapter 8 of that book will help you figure out how to have that conversation with that team member. And that's one of the key 7 management polarities. So let's see here. What else have we got?
I can see chapter 8 and chapter 9 are both big with him.
Yeah, chapter 9, collaboration over directing. You know, worth exploring. I don't know that he's super out of balance here. He leans collaboration, which may be appropriate given the kind of organization you have and the kind of role that he's in. So I wouldn't necessarily say that. You should read it and see. The book will help you truly diagnose. Like, they'll be like, oh yeah, definitely, I'm seeing that. He's for sure. And then the last one is really interesting too. A lot of people, this is one of these polarities that a lot of people don't think about or notice. And that is whether you acknowledge your team or acknowledge yourself. So here's what happens. Most everybody who takes this quiz always says, I'm bigger on acknowledging my team more than I am acknowledging myself. Here's the problem with that. If you only acknowledge your team's contribution and you ignore the fact that you as a leader have made a significant impact, they begin to question what it is you do. So actually acknowledging yourself in ways that are not overly, you know, self-congratulating, but just acknowledging like, I went out and did this thing and it achieved this result for us. That helps them see, oh, our leader's up to something, doing something important, and it builds your credibility. If you do that to the exclusion of acknowledging your team, then your leader loses credibility for the other reasons. So that's built into all these polarities is overemphasis on one will cause the downside of each.
So then my job is to take this information, go read the book or those relevant chapters, and then kind of develop my own plan and starting to have conversation with them.
Yeah. And I would also tell you to take this quiz and see whether it reflects you accurately and check.
I did take it. I just I don't remember what I did with it, but I can take it again.
So check in with yourself and see, where do I live on these polarities?
Okay.
And then help you manage him a little bit better. So that's the first thing I would say, that might help you get at some of the things that you're not happy with. And you might give him a copy of the book too, and just say, I want you to read these sections because they were really helpful to me. They might be helpful to you. And just see if you can see yourself in here. Okay. And again, what you're saying to him is, I want to develop you to a place where you can take over this business. And one part of that is your management chops. And this is a book that is designed to help you build and develop your management chops.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Questions and comments from the other two that are watching us have this conversation?
I'm going to take the quiz.
Did I put it in the, I can drop it in the link. It's kind of hard to find. I deliberately don't really promote it because it doesn't, you can see all the glitches with it, but let me drop it in the thing here. I don't even think there's a link to
the 7MP quiz. It's shanehits.com/7MP quiz.
There we go.
7MP quiz.
I'll drop it in the chat so you guys can put that link and take it and give it to others. And again, unfortunately, the quiz is like the 5 leadership languages. I spent a lot of time building the quiz and doing results so that you didn't have to read the book. This one was an afterthought after I'd written the book. I was like, oh, they need a quiz. They need an assessment. So I threw it together, but it's not really like useful unless you have a book. You're just like, oh, cool. I scored on something, but I don't know what to do with it. So unfortunately, you need the book for it to be useful.
And so in the process that I'm undertaking, Shane, would you suggest sticking with this, or would you like do this and the Enneagram and just start having regular conversations with them?
I'd start here. I think the Enneagram is really useful. I think it's harder to do well. This is lower hanging fruit, easier to not mess up. The Enneagram is complex and subtle, and I've spent many years developing mastery in it, which is why I tend to be the one to do it with people. Whereas what I'm showing you here, if you read the book and take the quiz, you're very competent to handle this. But the Enneagram is very, very, it's really powerful, and I highly recommend it. But I think let's start here, and then we can migrate into the Enneagram, and I'll dig up a link. They're always changing. Like, there's so many tests that are around, and some are better than others, but.
My view is, even if I just saw the Enneagram, knowing what just be helpful in a way.
Yeah, that might be helpful. Absolutely. And the issue with it is that the reason that the Enneagram is a little bit tricky is it's not always easy to help people find their type. Even if they scored their type, that may or may not be their type. That's why Enneagram inventories in general are a little bit slippery. Some are better than others, and they're generally reliable, but they're not always. And so if you get kind of overly committed to a narrative that isn't even accurate, then it's not as useful. So that's the only thing I'd say. And some types are really easy to type, and others are slippery types. They
ours are slippery for yours and mine.
What's that?
Yours, we're the same, right? It's slippery. It took me nines. Several months to figure that out, right?
Yep. Nines and threes are both pretty slippery. Eights, sevens, fives are pretty clear. Ones are often pretty clear. So, good. Good questions, though. So take a look at that. I'd start with the book. Keep it simple. Good.
Yep.
We got 15 minutes for those who would like it. I'll stick around. Do you guys have other questions, comments? Maybe you've been taking the quiz.
I don't want to steal the time. I have one other question.
Yeah, sure.
But guys, if y'all, because I've used too much of this. Be cool. I just
forgot.
So, one thing that I did as a side business just recently is I invested with my older son, who I thought had an interesting idea for a retail establishment. And through COVID and whatever, finally got open like 10 days ago. And it's not rocket science. Like, there's it's a boutique. It's essentially a boutique sunglass hut, like a retail establishment sunglass store. And the rationale behind it, I think, makes sense. Like, it's something people want to try on. So I don't think it really gets tremendously disintermediated by the internet. Price point is relatively low, so people can make impulse purchases, which is good. margins are humongous, which is good. The cost of it is kind of small. So, you know, it's like, if it works, it's a nice business. You can open 10 or 20 of them, like have a real business. And if it doesn't work, you know, I didn't lose that much. But just open. And so this is all in the sense of, I'm trying to teach my son how to fish as opposed to giving him a fish. Right. And, you know, now that it's open, you know, we've had good days and bad days, and we're starting to, you know, see what works and what doesn't work. But I'm no expert in this field, right? And he's, again, I'm trying to teach him how to fish, and I'm like, we're being calm here. Like, we did a good job opening it. Let's think about where we're heading and try and, you know, kind of create a path and all of those things. Nobody's panicking for, you know, 3 months or 6 months, but, you know, like, let's right the ship, everything's good. Pat, what are there, like, steps or processes that we can run, like, just trying to, okay, how do we evaluate what we're learning? Are we making sure that we're looking at the right things? Are we, you know, I mean, this is all new to me because it's just something that I don't know that well. And I'm more interested in his success than I am in whether the store succeeds, although I think it's kind of, you know, that somehow it'll be tied together, but it's just kind of a general new venture. Like, are we being thoughtful about this? Right.
I would say one of the most important things you've got to get at is benchmarks and dashboards. So, you know, in any business, if you understand that the conversion rate never goes above 5% for any of your competitors ever, on a given something, right? Whatever, I'm just picking random numbers, then you know you're doing great. But if you're converting at 1%, that's got to change. Like, you've got to know that that number is way off. So that's the hardest part about entering a new business you know nothing about, is you have no way to benchmark it accurately. So you have no idea whether you're spending your energy on the right thing or the wrong thing. So I would say, whatever you can do to go research and find and talk to other experts and understand, you know, what is a proper benchmark? And what are the metrics, you know, that you have questions about? That's to me, and again, I don't know anything about this business either. So I'm just saying, I have these generic questions that I always ask when I'm in a new business is, how do you know you're winning? What does winning look like? And make sure you're realistic about that. Don't just assume that I've got a goal and my goal is I want to convert 80% of all my people. Great. Good luck. You're going to fail constantly and you'll be very discouraged. So I think that's my first recommendation, is just see if you can get smart about what's a reasonable benchmark, and what are the analytics that we want to be tracking to know.
Yeah, that actually makes really good sense.
And then how are we going to track those things? You know, if you're a retail store, whoever's running that retail store, you're going to need to collect data. And that data may be observational or it may be digital, but you're going to want that data. You know, how many people stop by? How many are men? How many are women? What ages are they? Who seems to be drawn in more than others? Are we in the right spot in the mall? Is there a ton of traffic in another area? Those are just, for me, those are all those benchmark questions. So what you first want to do is start collecting as much of the data that you think is relevant as you can, track it, and in the meantime, start going out and finding out benchmarks. Because without the data, the benchmarks don't mean anything either, because you're like, I don't know. I have no idea how we're doing. So those are the things that I would say.
Okay. It's helpful.
Yeah, you bet.
You kind of know it intuitively, but nice to hear. And
yeah,
you start, you know, tile by tile building, you know, building a floor, you know, brick by brick building.
And it's amazing to me how few people get this. I mean, there's, you know, one of my clients who's on this group call, he's migrated into a private client role. So he's less on the calls now, but he, you know, he and his board, I interviewed his board, and it was like, none of them knew what winning looked like. They all had completely divergent things based on their own opinions. Like, we think we should have this many clients now. And you're like, how did you get there? How many clients are there? How do you know that's the conversion rate in your industry? You've never been in this industry. So hire someone who's smart, who's been in the industry, or go out and start interviewing others who are like this, or buy research or whatever you need to do, but get smart before you start holding people accountable to data that may or may not be valid.
Okay. It's very helpful. Thank you, Shane.
Yeah, you bet. I invest a huge amount of time, money, and energy in tracking my marketing efforts, my sales efforts. I know every, and I pay for it that most people don't pay for, because now I know how to do what I'm doing. There are lots and lots of data points that are not relevant that lots of people focus on. They don't know how to link it to the right thing, and they don't know what the right benchmark is. And that helps me be really calibrated. I now know, like, oh, I'm not scaling that ad because it's clearly not converting on the one data point that matters most. It's converting on 13 others that are awesome, but they're not converting on this one, the one that matters. So that kind of stuff.
Okay.
Other questions? Got 10 more minutes, 9 minutes. Anybody else want to talk?
Sounds like you and Mitch have done some succession planning. I'm interested to learn more kind of on that topic. Is there modules or anything in the workbooks or so forth that I should, you know, look at as an orientation, so to speak?
Yeah, it's a good question. You know, I probably should build a module around it or a bonus or something. I haven't actually done that. You know, I'm happy to just work with you on coaching calls for now until I build something like that. But like, if you have a specific question, you know, I can give you some basic architecture ideas, but do you have a specific question, or are you just looking for general?
Yeah, more general. I think we're probably, you know, we went through for Mitch's context, we went through an acquisition in February of this past year where we were acquired. So various partners in the organization, you know, are pretty well engaged, probably at least for the next 3 years. 3 to 5 years, depending on how the various structures of their individual deal was executed. And so, you know, we're looking at it more along the lines of, okay, when do we start, you know, preparing for an eventual partner to leave? You know, we're most of the partners are pretty young, so yeah, it's a little bit unclear as to whether or not they're going to go do something else after, you know, their 3 to 5 years is up. But, you know, we have a lot of young talent in the organization. We've built the organization that way and really groomed and built people upwards. And so we want to continue that trajectory for those employees to continue their overall growth. So you're really just general information about, okay, when's too early to start, or are we, you know, we're already starting now, I feel like, you know, how do we ensure that there's a successful kind of handoff and succession in various roles throughout the organization?
Yeah, so if you're going to do succession planning, one of the places to start is a simple assessment of the current employees in the roles.
Okay.
And you do a red, yellow, green exercise. Red is if they're not performing in their current role. Yellow is if they're performing in their current role. And green is if you imagine doubling their current role, that they would perform well there. That's a green. Anybody who's red, you should have conversations with now about 90-day performance plans.
Right.
Anybody who's green, you want to have conversations about how to keep them. You want to get them highly incentivized, and you want to start developing a map for their career at your organization. So that's just the starting point and can be very helpful.
Yeah.
There are lots of other things you can do in succession planning, but honestly, the starting point is just that.
Yeah.
And it's not just as you observe, it's not just succession planning, it's just development plans.
Right.
You know, because not everybody needs to succeed another. The second thing you need to do when it comes to succession planning is identify the roles in the company that if somebody won the lottery and left, would have the biggest impact on the organization. And begin now developing a plan that you would put in place, even if it was temporary, so that if somebody won the lottery and they vanished, you could say, we got this.
Right.
I prefer that over hit by a bus. I wish people well. So like your CEO, you guys should have already had a succession plan in place for your CEO, because that's clearly a critical role that if he won the lottery and flipped the ball,
he essentially did. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Then you'd want to make sure, because one day he'll get tired of it and bored, and you want to make sure you've got a plan in place.
Yeah. Fair enough.
Awesome. Other comments, questions?
Good. It's a helpful day.
Good.
Yeah, very. Always.
Thanks for joining me, Miss.
Always insightful and nerve-wracking at the same time. It's great.
You're doing good. You're all doing great. Keep at it. I'm super, super happy for you. And for sure, you, JD, killing it over there with your climbing the ladder and people noticing. And that's exactly what I, you know, I have two kinds of clients. I have middle managers in this program, and I have business owners. And business owners look for direct ROI on finances, and middle managers look for, like, am I getting noticed and ascending through the ranks? And, you know, because the ROI for you isn't always direct financial. It's going to be pay raises and all that stuff. So I'm glad you're being seen and recognized for the work you're doing.
Oh, thank you for your help.
Yeah.
Congratulations, JD.
Okay. Awesome, you guys. Be well. Pleasure chatting.
All right, everyone.
Thank you. Nice to meet you, Mitch. Take care.
Yeah, nice to meet you all.